coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, y'all, what's going on? What it do? What's popping? All the good things. It's your boy, Ricky Carmona. Welcome to Who Shot Ya? Oh, we have got a fun episode today, y'all. Let's just start off by introducing who we got in the building. First off, she's a film critic, host of Switchblade Sisters podcast.
Oh, God, it's me. It's me.
Yes, there she is right there. It's the one and only. Sometimes it's Knowles and April. April Wolf in the building. What is good with you?
Okay, so I...
She got a list.
I come in ready. There is an article that was posted on the Village Voice today that I've just been, like, living for all day. And it's a woman I know, Talia Levine. She went to go see Stormy Daniels in a strip club in New York. Mm. And this, it's just this slice of Americana. You have to read this article. I'm going to read you the lead because the lead is amazing. And I'm going to make it dramatic.
Please do.
It's after midnight on a Thursday in the heart of Long Island, and I'm staring at a prominent pair of pebbled pink nipples that might have been seen by the President of the United States. That's such a good opener. I'm living for this article. Just read it. She's one of my favorite people, and I love this. It just describes America in this one strip club, this one surreal night at a strip club, and you just have to read it, all of it. That's me. I'm just living for it.
April, living for Stormy Daniels, yo. That's what's up. That's what's up. To my right, I got my man, El Mero Mero. He's the film reviews editor at The Wrap. El Mero Mero de Navidad. The one and only Alonzo Duralde in the building. What is good, Alonzo?
You know, I know it's the thing where it's like, okay, what thing is the fat guy going to talk about that's like a totally bad for you piece of junk food? But
that was going to be my intro for you next week.
I know. Well, I'm just, you know, I didn't
hey,
need
Alonzo,
to hedge off
what
the
thing is the fat guy going to talk about?
Well, the fat guy was at CVS this week, and they have the Easter candy out. And this year, there's a Reese's egg. It looks like the Cadbury egg, but it's a Reese's egg. And they have got that chocolate to peanut butter ratio down pretty well, I gotta say. Because sometimes the Reese's change sizes and they don't, you know, you get a Brundlefly situation. But the Reese's Easter egg is on point.
America's children are getting spoiled.
Little sh. Yeah.
What I am realizing is I would totally holler at Reese's piece, like a Reese's Brundlefly chocolate. That's what I got out of all of that. And people have been asking, when is this going to happen, yo? And it's happening right now. Our third special guest. Let me get the credits ready here. Oh, she's the host of the new baseball podcast, Three Swings, indeed. Co-host of the wonderful comedy show that you can see every Tuesday in Los Angeles, Put Your Hands Together at UCB. She's the former co-host of a little hit movie podcast that we had on this network right here, Wham Bam Cow. Wham Bam Cow.
Movies. Come on.
Oh, thank you. You saw where I was going. It's the one and only lady who's so dope when she's dressed so fresh and so clean. The Lady James Dean Butcher is
shit.
In the house.
Give the people what they want, yes. And the people want the Lady James Dean. Just We back, Ricky.
We back.
Like that $1 million bill. I'm back. Thanks for having me on your podcast. This is wonderful.
Thank you for being here, Ricky.
Happy to be back in the cube.
Yes.
Talking about moving pictures.
Yes, we've made the lighting a little bit more moody.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah. I like the yellow one. Makes me feel like I'm in an old Avengers movie. And then... Blade Runner 2049. It's perfect.
What is good with you? How you been, Rhea?
Many things are good with me. I was going to say that I got sick on a cruise ship last week, and the only thing I could do was watch movies, and it made me weirdly fall in love with the Marvel movies all of a sudden, because you remember me not liking them at all,
Ricky. Not a big fan.
Because I was very sick of them, and I think I had to get sick to like them again. But I also think like the ones that have recently come out, Ragnarok and, of course, Black Panther, have gotten me like into the whole thing again, or just to begin with, and I even watched Ant-Man.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, wow. I straight up did it, and I'm excited about Ant-Man and Wasp. I don't know. I don't know what happened to me. That's what I was going to say. But on my way over here, I got some very good news that people might be excited about. My television show, Take My Wife, is going to be on iTunes very soon.
Oh, that's what's up. Rhea, coming iTunes. In with the exclusives.
Coming with the exclusives in with exclusives. What day does this episode drop?
This will be dropping on Friday.
Perfect. So this is a Friday. It's going to be on iTunes on Monday.
Fantastic.
And it's going to be $9.99 for each season. So everybody that's been like, when can we see it? That's when you can see it. So stop asking me. No. It's kind of like a death of a thousand cuts of just like, oh, my show went away and everyone wants to see it. This is a great problem to have, but also breaking my heart every single day.
Sure.
So I'm glad that it's coming out because a lot of people worked really hard on it. Not just me, not just my wife, but a lot of people. People cut bagels. It was just like deathbed. You understand? I would love for people to see it. They're going to get to see it on Monday. So very excited.
That's what's up.
Let's
Absolutely.
Get it to number one.
Please do. Yeah, do support it, yo. Support it.
What's good, Ricky?
My man.
I was not here last week. It was my turn.
Okay.
I mean, now I need you guys to calm down. That's what I mean. Oh, well, what's good with me, y'all, is it is the end of Hiatus Ricky. R.I.P. Hiatus Ricky.
Oh.
It's been un placer, a pleasure to not be doing anything and just kind of being able to enjoy a life for the past 2.5 months. I got some reading done. I lost some weight. I worked out. I stopped drinking for a while. I got to go see Ali Shaheed Muhammad, DJ from A Tribe Called Quest, over the weekend. Just a nice, lovely, you know, landing into getting back to work, and just feels good. I'll probably never talk to you guys again, except on Wednesdays when I'm in this room, as I will be obsessed with work. But it's good to be here, y'all. Rhea, you mentioned Blade Runner 2049.
Yes, I
did. We have a stacked episode, yo. On today's episode, we're going to be talking females in sci-fi movies. We're going to be talking about Annihilation, giving our review of that. We have the sound editor, Academy Award nominee Mark Mangini from Blade Runner 2049. Got to do an interview with him. It was super dope. April and I, spoiler alert, might have geeked out during it. And at the end of the episode, we will have our staff picks for you. But before we get into all that, it is time for a news roundup game called It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Here's how it works. I'll read a news blurb or a headline. Rhea, April, or Alonzo will jump in with their take by answering these two questions. Is this important? Do I care? Let's find out. Well, if you're a fan of Willem Dafoe, you know his characters rarely make it to the end of the movie. And this week on the Funny or Die show IMDb Me, he went through a bunch of his characters' deaths. And there's some spoilers here, nerds, so plug your ears if you don't want to know.
You know, a lot of your characters end up dying in these movies.
Do you die or not die? To live and die in L.A.?
I get shot and I get put on fire.
Platoon?
Lots of bullets.
Mississippi Burning?
No die.
Trying for the Spirit?
No die. No,
Wild at Heart?
Yes, big time.
Flight of the Intruder.
They drop bombs on me.
Shadow of a Vampire.
I'm burned by the light.
Spider-Man.
I get skewered by a glider.
Triple X. I think you're again exploded by a bomb dropped on you or something.
Maybe I am. I die bad in that one. I get shot pretty bad. I get my throat slashed in a really nasty way.
Daybreakers.
I do, and then I come back.
Fantastic Mr. Fox. Right, doesn't die.
Yes, he does. He's the only one that dies.
Last Temptation of Christ.
I sort of die in that one.
He's at Sean Bean status. And they practically sold Platoon with, like, the image of him, like, getting shot on the poster.
The Willem Dafoe Pieta.
Is this important? Do y'all care?
I mean, he does it well.
He's so good at it.
I mean, I think definitely Wild at Heart is my favorite death out of all of those because it's just, like, it's so ridiculous and over the top.
Does he die in Streets of Fire?
I don't know if he does.
He loses, but I don't know if he dies.
Definitely my favorite street axe fight in a weird rock musical movie of all time.
And there's a lot of competition there.
There's something about him that he's like so alien that people are like, yeah, fuck, kill him. You know?
Kill him, Willem. Did they say that on the fucking Funny or Die thing? Come on, man.
That's like such a missed opportunity.
It was sitting on the table. Kill him, Dafoe. Come on.
Kill him, Dafoe.
Actually, I watched him today in his first movie role. It was in Tony Scott's The Hunger. In case you all didn't know.
Oh, that's right.
A very small role in Tony Scott's The Hunger.
Like he and Anne Magnusson are the punks at the beginning, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Or no, he's harassing Susan Sarandon's character in a phone booth. That's
Oh, that's right.
And Anne Magnuson is at the beginning with Bauhaus. Anyway, yes. Sorry.
Hey, y'all, who's planning to Who Shot Your Field Trip? Because one place we could go is Camp Crystal from Friday the 13th. That's what's up. Camp Nobi Bosco, a Boy Scouts camp in Hardwick, New Jersey. And the location for the original Friday the 13th is opening its doors for guests to stay overnight. They're opening for one weekend in April. No info on whether Jason or Mrs. Voorhees are going to be there. Womp, womp. April, do you have your sleeping bags packed for this trip?
I want to go so bad.
We knew you did.
I know. I want to go so bad. I didn't know anything about this, so thanks, podcast that I'm on, for telling me.
She's going to smoke dope and take her top off and then get stabbed.
I've been
arrow through the neck.
My whole life. I've been waiting for this end.
The role of a lifetime.
Oh, God.
Dream come true.
Is this important? Do you all care?
I am terrified of this. No, thank you. Goodbye. I'm walking out of the studio. No, thanks. Bye-bye.
This is when I'm glad, yeah, that, like, people of color were not really highlighted in a Friday the 13th right. movie. So, yeah, I'm going to pass on
you know
this.
What? There's like, not many lesbians in them either, so I feel like, I'm good. I'm going to get out of here.
What's right?
Nothing.
I mean, not many that are out.
Out.
We'll say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Because I think if we really think
I've
about it.
I've seen their fingernails, April. I've seen.
Some of those lady camp counselors are, you know, they're rocking a butch look.
Oh, my God. My favorite thing from the additional info is, quote, ticket prices vary, but certain tickets include dinner and breakfast. Thank you.
Yeah. What? That's optimism if you think you're getting dinner and breakfast.
Oh, breakfast.
You're going to survive the night? Really?
That's
you're
going
to be the final girl? I don't think so.
That's great.
Yeah, a little meet and greet with Jason. Finally, the film the world has been waiting for is going to be made. I'm not referring to Marvel coming out with a solo movie about Storm. According to Variety, Fox Searchlight is producing a film about Flamin' Hot Cheetos called Flamin' Hot. The movie's not about the Cheetos themselves, boo, but about the man who came up with them, Richard Montañez. Yes, dale! Montañez invented the Flamin' Hot Cheeto while working as a janitor for Frito-Lay, and soon the whole world will be able to see his story on the big screen. Is this important? Do you all care? Will they be serving Flamin' Hot popcorn at the theater, though?
I really want it to be animated Flamin' Hot Cheeto.
Yeah.
I mean, like, just like a Minion style kind of, like, just Flamin' Hot Cheetos just mumbling at each other for 2 hours. I would watch the shit out of that.
It's so weird that we're living in a world where that was exactly what most people
Everyone.
Thought it was going to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm like, wait, it's not?
100%.
It's a biopic?
Oh, it's a Good Will Hunting kind of a thing?
Is, this, right. is there a gig here for Luis Guzman, either as the guy or as the guy's father?
Or the Cheeto.
The voice of the Cheeto.
Talking Cheeto.
I'm in.
Oh, absolutely.
And then Michael Pena in flashback. Come on, people.
What? Come on.
Although
now.
I think Flamin' Hot Cheetos is going to be on next season of RuPaul's Drag Race, but that's just a theory.
That's a good theory.
Oh, that made me laugh.
Yeah, no, it's, I can imagine the whole thing, and it's beautiful.
Well, hey, you know, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we will be talking about female protagonists in sci-fi and Annihilation. We'll be right back.
In celeb news this week, the hosts of Lady to Lady took a break from hanging with today's hottest comedians, actors, and writers to sell a sex machine. What'd they do with all that cash?
Rent a party bus to go to Magic Mike Live in Vegas, of course. All of this on the heels of a salacious sizzler session with Home Alone 4-star French Stewart.
Want to know what the f*** we're talking about? Tune into Lady to Lady whenever, wherever you listen to podcasts. Can you keep a secret? Neither can we.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are...
Alonzo Duralde.
Rhea Butcher.
April Wolf.
The one and only. Today we are talking about Annihilation. Alonzo, can you give us a brief synopsis of the film, please?
No.
Good luck.
No, I cannot. But all right, let's give this a crack. And I'm going to try not to spoil things. Natalie Portman is a biologist at
Spoiler.
Johns Hopkins, and she is married. She is ex-military, and she's married to current Sergeant Oscar Isaac, and he has been missing for a year and presumed dead, having gone on a very secret mission. But then he comes back one day. Or has he?
What?
And when she tries to take him to the hospital, they are immediately intercepted by the army, and she's whisked off to a secret base where she finds out that where he went was this thing called the Shimmer. It's a big sort of translucent prismatic bubble that landed on a lighthouse by a swamp and has been getting larger and larger and larger. They send people in, and nobody comes out except for Oscar Isaac. So Natalie Portman joins an all-female scientist team along with Jennifer Jason Leigh, Gina Rodriguez, Tessa Thompson, and Tuva Novotny to figure out what's in the Shimmer and how to stop it. And then shit gets weird.
That was such a good...
Yeah, good stuff.
I'm just going to sit back and enjoy what you just told me. That's great.
April, you're a fan of slow, moody thrillers. What'd you think of the film?
I fucking love it. Yeah. I mean, it's not up there for me with Under the Skin quite yet,
but
it is in that kind of intellectual, moody thriller, slow build-up, lots of questions kind of category. And for a sci-fi, that's kind of my gold standard, especially when so much sci-fi is usually like just big-titted ladies on a marquee, sex worker kind of thing, like these stereotypes of like the only roles that women can have in a dystopian future. Mm-hmm. So this one is a very different version of that, and it makes me really happy because it's just five women going on this impossible mission, and they might be the ones to succeed where many men have failed.
Yeah. Yeah. Rhea?
There was a moment. Well, number one, I went to see this today.
It's fresh.
Yeah, it's very fresh. I sat in the theater and was like, oh, cool, I think I'm going to be alone in this. And then I was like, oh, God. I think I'm going to be alone in this. Because usually it's like very fun to go see a movie by yourself. And I was like, oh, my God, no, please, no, other people, please, please, please. I felt like I was going to just like get pulled, like the abyss, just get pulled into the movie. But, yes, other people showed up, so that was good. But there was a moment, I don't want to spoil anything by saying like where it was in the movie. But I just was sitting there going, I think I love this. And I don't have those feelings super often with movies because, like, whatever. There's just, like, so many movies all the time. And like April was saying, it tends to be so, like, sexualized. And I think that's what I overall really loved about this movie. Number one, it's one of those experiences. And I love movies like that. I really love Blade Runner 2049 for that same reason, like a meditative sort of poem on a theme, or maybe not. It's a theme, maybe it is. And the fact that it is all women, and there's really nothing made of that other than they're there, and mm-hmm. like they've run out of options, and it's not that they've run out of options, so now they're throwing ladies in there. It's just like, we've put all this military in there, and that's not working, so we'll take all these different kinds of people. I really loved the experience of watching this movie.
Yeah.
And especially, I liked so much of Ex Machina, but didn't like so much of it because a lot of it was so, like, sexualized that I was like, does this always have to be what this is when there's, like, AI and it's a dude and a woman and the woman is the thing? And blah, 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 blah. So I really liked that was just completely absent from this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about it a little bit. It's an all female cast, and there's women of color in a sci-fi movie, something we rarely get to see. Here's a tweet from one of the stars, Tessa Thompson. She tweeted, "I gotta say, appreciate everyone who's going out to see Annihilation this weekend, but the photos of women of color excitingly tagging me and she wrote a Twitter handle. Here's Gina. That's Gina Rodriguez, who's also in it. Is really special to me. Shout out to my sci-fi Latinas. That's what's up. That's me. Shout out to my sci-fi magic black girls. Shimmy in that Shimmer." Should they have played Shimmy Shimmy Y'all at one point in the song? Every time they would say the Shimmer,
yeah.
I would hear dun, 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 dun. I was like, oh, come on, play that shit. How did we feel about the just complete presence of women in this, women of color? I did like, Rhea, you had kind of like said they don't hit you over the head with it. There's a conversation that happens in the movie. Hey, we've been sending men in there nonstop. It hasn't worked. We're sending women in now.
But they make a comment where they're just like scientists. They correct each other and they're just like women, but scientists.
Yes.
You're like, that's who we're sending in.
I like you were saying, I think I sort of like the not big deal about it. It's not like a League of Their Own or something where it's like, let's try the ladies,
right.
You know. It just seemed like a very kind of, well, why wouldn't you send these people in? Because they're all super smart or tough or, you know, have experience or, you know, it's that team where like, oh, here's the biologist and there's the psychologist and there's the physicist. And like they've all got their task and their skill that they bring to it. So it's, you know, it's like the A-team, whatever. They just all happen to be, you know, X-chromosome people.
How did we feel about the female characters in the movies?
I mean, I super dug all of them. I felt like, you know, for a movie that's about five people, but there's a lead, I felt like each of them were very, like, quickly carved out as what they were going to be. Like, I picked it up immediately at that table. Like, I just, you know, you, like, purposely clock everybody. And then later on, what's her name? Tuva Novotny, Cass is, like, explaining everything about them. And then you're, like, getting these, like, Ghostbuster-y kind of a feeling from everybody. And I just, like, Tessa Thompson is, I think, I mean, everybody knows how amazing Tessa Thompson is because you've seen her in everything that she's making. And she's amazing in it. But she just has, I think, perhaps the biggest range in Hollywood right now. Yeah. Like, I just think what she is doing is actually mind-blowing. Like, especially in this movie, she is nothing that I've seen her do yet, and everything I've seen her do is different every time. Yeah. And, like, yep. It's just what she is doing in this movie is tremendous. And Tuva Nova, I don't even know what else she's been in. I'm sure I've seen her in other stuff. Like
a lot of Swedish TV, mostly.
Yeah, I just, like, man, everybody is crushing it, you know. Like, yeah. I just feel like, I mean, it's like I want to see these same people in a Predator reboot, you know. Like, I just want to see the same fucking thing again. Like,
that's what's up.
My nothing but you know, love for my Predator.
Of
this
course,
this is my Predator.
Absolutely.
And I love a casual queer character where it's mentioned, no one cares, and it doesn't come up again.
Yeah.
Well, let's open up the conversation a bit. We asked our followers on Facebook and Twitter to share with us their favorite female protagonists of sci-fi films. I'm going to share some of the responses with you. We got a whole list here, so anybody can chime in with some that they see that they like as well. Let me know if there's any that you agree with or disagree with. I'll start with Gabe Vernon here. I don't care if it's basic. I'll say it, girl. I love Sigourney Weaver. It's an equal toss-up between Alien and Galaxy Quest.
No, equal?
I mean, it's...
All right, game.
I mean, Sigourney is, like, on, like, the Mount Rushmore or, like Queen. Like, yeah. She's there. I don't know if I put Galaxy Quest and Alien right next
to
each
other. She
only
gets one spot on Mount Rushmore.
No. Each Ripley from each movie is Mount Rushmore.
Because they all have different haircuts. That's true.
Yeah. Drastically.
Oh, I can see it.
Yeah, I can see it. It's right there.
That's my new birthday cake.
Now, Bobby on Twitter said Barbarella, and I'm like, okay, I'm going with that for sure. Like, that is because, yeah, for all the stuff that it's a sort of crazy sex pot, Jane Fonda does kind of have agency and does run that movie, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And she's totally in charge of her orgasms, among other things. I like it a lot.
Who else do we have here? I'm just going to choose. Jules Ponce wrote, honestly, besides Ripley, I can't think of many. TV has better female sci-fi characters like Buffy or Scully. If I can put on my nerd sunglasses, there's been two X-Files movies, so yeah. Scully is part of the movie lexicon.
Also, Buffy was a movie, so come on.
No one's counting that one.
Okay. I'm happy that Kristen Gunther said Amy Adams in Arrival because I fully agree. It's the same kind of thing with the female heroines here where it's just like there's intelligence and a kind of bravery, you know, and those two things. It doesn't have to be only guns and running, but I love her character, you know, leading the humans.
Yeah. I guess now that I'm thinking about it, is I guess now since we are seeing more women in lead roles in sci-fi films, it is kind of cool to see like the dawn of both sides of the roles. We're going to get like your action, they can whoop ass, and then we're going to get your Amy Adams in Arrival.
Mm-hmm.
I love Jodie Foster in Contact.
And Portman's character, I think, you know, they much is made of the fact that she is herself a combat veteran.
Yeah.
So she can, like, you know, unleash the hell when she needs to.
I mean, like, look, I am very much like a pacifist and very pro gun control and this whole debate about all of it. But when she shoots that alligator, I was like, I think I need to get divorced. Because, excuse me, Ms. Portman.
Dina, help reloading that gun.
I also, Natalie Portman is a very tiny human being. Mm-hmm. You know, like, she's just a very small person. And I thought she really embodied military personnel very well. Like, it was very believable.
Yeah, isn't it weird? Like, I sometimes think I don't appreciate her enough and how fucking good she is.
She's Princess Leia's mother.
Right. That's a great point.
Clint Richardson says, Angela Bassett in Strange Days.
Right now.
Oh, God. I just saw her at the Wrinkle in Time premiere, and
she asked about me.
That woman's got a painting in the attic because holy crap, she just looks.
I mean,
like not a day older than Strange Day.
I hope everyone listening got that joke. They're like,
Google it, kids.
Google the picture of Dorian Gray.
Ryan E. Johnson is on the page with April. Scarlett Johansson gives the best performance of all time in Under the Skin. It's amazing how she can be so cold and emotionless while still being utterly enthralling. That's an amazing movie.
I love it so much. And I don't care. I mean, everyone's just like, it's not like the book. I'm like, fuck the book. I don't care. Love this movie.
The book is about like farming, right?
And this one is too, but it's also like the book doesn't have Micah Levy's score either.
Yeah,
or Mika Levy.
Somebody was, Annihilation was also based on like a series.
It's like a trilogy of books. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which I've heard people either say, yay, it's not like the books, or boo, it's not like the books. And I went to this thing at the WeHo Library last week where Andre Aciman, who wrote the novel Call Me By Your Name, was speaking. And somebody asked him about like how he felt about the changes that they made in the book on the way to making a movie. He goes, well, I wrote the book, so I had my say. And then the filmmaker gets to come in, and then they have their say.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's my new answer now for adaptations.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be a different interpretation.
The book is not a screenplay. These are people that have probably never actually sat and read a screenplay, not trying to be like, everyone sucks. But it is like a very real thing, and sometimes the book is an experience, and sometimes the movie is an experience, and sometimes they're a good experience together, but like it's two different forms of art.
Yeah, you know? And the movie doesn't like come and set all the copies of the book on fire.
Right? No.
Right. Wait, I thought it did.
Is that what the new Fahrenheit on HBO is about? Like that's the okay. Yeah. That's a different. Hey, are we gonna talk about how Paramount kinda tanked this one for?
I mean, sure, yeah. We can definitely do that. Apparently there's a Paramount executive said that this movie's, I believe, is it too intelligent? Is that right?
Too intellectual.
Too intellectual.
Too many of these people are teachers. No one's going to understand it. It's not relatable.
Well, look, can
someone work for Uber?
When's the first movie going to be released directly through Uber?
Directly to Uber? Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
What? Taxi with Queen Latifah and Jimmy Fallon.
Paramount is still smarting from Mother, bless their hearts.
Which we also love,
but like at the F cinema score, this one got a C, so like, woo!
What?
I know. But again, these are like those kind of heady sci-fi movies, and even Blade Runner 2049, we all loved it, but that movie did not make money.
Right.
And neither did the first Blade Runner, but years later, like people grew to dig it, and so this falls in that category of sort of cerebral, I don't quite know what I just saw, I need to talk about it, and while those movies get a cult following, and people love those movies intently and watch them over and over again and discuss them on the net forever. Opening weekend audiences are kind of like,
it's up against fucking Black Panther and Game Night.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Two like kind of juggernaut things that I don't know. It's kind of hard to do.
I was talking about it today. I feel like movie studios are missing an opportunity in marketing the film as an experience to go see in the theater. Because, they're trying to get people. That was the whole reason that they had 3D and, like, all of this stuff that people have just, like, pretty much gotten sick of, I feel like. But this is a movie that you can watch it at home, but I can't imagine that and I love watching movies, that I would be able to keep my attention to the movie at home. Like, if I was watching this. Not the way that I can in a theater. I mean, when the bear shows up, I sat up and had my arms on my knees and was just going, what the fuck is going to happen?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
You know, like, yeah, I, absolutely.
And yes. If I was not in a theater, I probably would have, like, just gotten up and gone to the bathroom because I would have been, like, stressed out. I like, yeah. would have had to check out. Like, this one dude was getting up. He must have gotten up 8 times in that movie. And I don't know if it's because maybe he has a bladder problem. Sure. Not trying to be rude. Or maybe he was stressed out like I was. But I think... I know it's like not, like I said at the beginning, I don't really understand business. I'm not a business person. But I feel like studios are missing out by not marketing that as a thing. Because yeah, people are really, I feel like they're going back to the movies in a way, in that way, for sound design and the, yeah.
The narrative that they create very much is like reactionary. Like, oh, people aren't going to this 3D then. Like, no, it's just... take a breath and realize that it's an experience and promote the movie that way somehow. Just start to work it so it's there's a reason that you should see this movie in the theater.
Oh my God, promote it at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or if you're going to promote it on, you know, on Netflix, don't make it seem like it's been dumped onto Netflix.
Well,
like,
and I think this is the kind of movie where this is the sort of movie that you start in a few markets and you get the word of mouth going and you get the like the big city critics talking about it and then you start expanding it out. But if you just dump it out wide and don't promote it on a weekend where Black Panther is still killing everything and Game Night is just opening, yeah, it gets lost in the shuffle.
Or you bring it to a big fall festival. I was surprised it was going to have a Feb release, but I was just like, okay, I could easily see this being at TIFF and being really marketed and being loved and appreciated and getting a lot of buzz out of the festival and then coming out to theaters. But no. I mean, I don't understand.
I'll tell you, to speak to the guy in your theater, I had to pee the whole time. But I knew, I could tell in like the second scene, I can't leave.
Oh, yeah.
Like, every single thing is going to be important. And if I miss anything, I'm going to be even more baffled later.
Same.
Sure.
Same. Yeah.
Well, let's go around then. Annihilation. Should people screen it, stream it, or skip it? I'll start with you, April.
Screen it.
Screen it. Absolutely. Go see it.
Screen it, but first stream it. And by stream it, I mean go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
But then screen
it.
I'm telling you.
For the bladder sensitive.
It was uncomfortable, but I was still riveted. That's how good this movie was.
What about you, Ricky?
I would say screen it as well. And I don't know when it will be available on Netflix. But as soon as you can stream it, definitely stream it as well. It's really good. Just kind of, I mean, I know it's based on a book, but felt like original sci-fi. Really, really, really dug it. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will be speaking to Academy Award nominee of Blade Runner 2049. Mr. Mark Mangini will be joining us. Come back, y'all.
I'm Hal Loveland.
I'm Danielle Radford.
I am Michael Eagle.
And we are the hosts of Tights and Fights, Maximum Fun's newest podcast dedicated to all things wrestling.
We'll be talking about Sasha Banks, the women's revolution, Sasha Banks, the brand split, and Sasha Banks' wigs.
And we'll also be talking about wrestler fashion. Some wrestlers wear too many clothes. Some wrestlers don't wear enough clothes at all.
And I'll be doing impressions of all your favorite wrestlers.
New episodes Thursdays on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts. Oh, yeah, dig it.
Tights and Fights Podcast. Tights and Fights.
Hey, y'all, welcome back. You're listening to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. With me in the studio are...
April Wolf.
Rhea Butcher.
And Alonzo Duralde.
This past week, April, Alonzo and I were lucky enough to sit down with Academy Award-winning sound editor Mark Mangini. This man has been nominated for 5 Oscars for sound editing. He won in 2015 for Mad Max Fury Road. Rhea was just hollering about that.
Oh, yeah.
And this year, he's nominated with Theo Green for his work on Blade Runner 2049. We sat down with him prior to the show and chatted about working in sound, his career, and Blade Runner 2049. So take a listen. Mark, congratulations on your nomination, and thank you for joining us.
I can't wait for this to happen. What are you going to do to me?
Mark thought this was going to be a real dry interview, guys. I said, oh, no, we giggle. I mean, we've already sang Stevie Wonder songs to you. That is going to be the energy of all of this here. Now, Mark, along with Theo Green, you're nominated for your sound editing work on Blade Runner 2049. Your colleagues Ron Bartlett and Doug Hemphill have been nominated for sound mixing on the film as well. Right. Can you explain what it is you do as a sound editor and then what it is that your colleagues do as sound mixers for us?
Sure. I'm going to explain that in the context of an analogy that's, I think, easier for most people to understand. Everyone knows what the cinematographer does, the director of photography. That's the person on the set that captures all the short little pieces of film that makes up a motion picture. But, of course, a movie isn't shot in order. You need a film editor to put all those pieces together in a logical order to make a motion picture. So, too, does the sound editor, myself, gather all the individual pieces of sound that make up the soundtrack of a motion picture to give to a sound mixer who then organizes them, mixes them into a complete soundtrack, a finished soundtrack.
Mm, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Did I make any more sense of it?
That's no, totally.
You totally did. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Alonzo.
No. I was just going to ask. So for you, you know, and obviously it's going to differ from film to film, but let's say with Blade Runner 2049 as an example, like what is your kind of blank canvas in terms of how much of the sound is handed to you as having been captured on the set versus things that you have to figure out how to recreate or invent from whole cloth,
right,
before you then hand that over to the editors?
Well, in a movie like Blade Runner...
Or the mixer, sorry. You're the editor.
I love that you use the expression blank canvas or tabula rasa, because that's an expression I use a lot in my work, because we are on movies... Science fiction films, often it is literally a blank canvas. There is very little to no production audio, what was captured on the set, that I can rely on. And given that it's science fiction, we have to, what I call, build worlds. This is an environment. This is a dystopian Los Angeles that doesn't exist. Well...
We're getting there. We're close.
We're getting to that.
Baby steps.
You know, there's no such thing as spinners and baseline machines and Dyna-based machines and blasters and these are sort of oppressive environments. So everything has to be created from scratch. So when I look at my workstation in my studio, it is literally a blank canvas. It is an empty sound page ready to be bombarded with audio that's up to me to create.
Are there – you've worked on so many amazing films. I mean, I want to ask you every question about Gremlins as well.
Wow, you did your research.
I was thinking about this as I came over here. I was like, oh, my God, how did he make, like, the sounds for anything that they were doing?
So many squishes.
Yeah. The popping, the bubblings.
What was your favorite original sound that you recorded for Blade Runner? Like, what was the most creative one where you're like, wow, that's amazing. I can't believe I got that sound.
It's always dangerous to say. I amazed myself at the risk of a little bit of arrogance. My favorite sound is actually a very musical sound in the film that accompanies Kay, played by Ryan Gosling, whenever he's in the midst of what I call his journey, trying to discover his roots. And it starts with a discussion with Denis Villeneuve, the director, who said to me in my first week of the film, I want you to compose with sound. Meaning he didn't want me to think, and I'm going to use a fancy film term, diegetically, meaning sound that is mirrored by something you see on screen. He wanted sound to work in the way that music works, to create mood and tension and emotion and cross borders. So my first experiments were, because I'm a musician as well, were very musical. I did a lot of work with distorted electric guitars. I did a lot of work with bells and chimes. And my favorite two things that came out of that were these beautiful, I thought, beautiful lilting melodic chimes that underpin Kay's walk through the desert and into the casino and in the church scene where he meets Frasia. And they sit in these quiet moments that the director wanted to be actually quiet, but I felt that the loneliness of these kind of musical pads were far more interesting than just not hearing anything.
Mm-hmm. Mark, can I say what my favorite sound, the way you created a sound? I watched you did an interview on a show on YouTube. I can't remember what the name of the show is, but you tell a story about how you got a subwoofer and put it in your wife's car,
yeah,
and we're just recording that. And I was like, that's... That's what we used to do in the hood back in the 80s in Chicago. That's literally how you would build a booming system. You would put a subwoofer in the trunk and turn it up, and then my mom would yell at me and my brothers.
Except we didn't put any beautiful music through it. What we put through was super low frequency, almost subsonic frequencies to excite the interior of my wife's car so that it would vibrate, and that we were trying to recreate the sort of tatty state of Kay's spinner. Like every time it flies, it rattles and shakes. So we, you know, put 20 cycles through this huge subwoofer inside, and it made her Honda Element go.
And then everyone pooped.
That's not true. That does, the brown tone is a fallacy.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. I'm not Ghostbusters. Mythbusters did a whole episode on that.
I'm glad you talked about the sort of the distinction between silence and sort of, you know, these kind of minimal sounds that underscore a thing. You've been in this industry for decades now, and I kind of feel like that in the last 10, 20 years, movies seem more and more afraid of silence. And I wonder if that was something that you had observed as a thing where people feel the need to kind of cram sound into every moment of the movie, whether it really needs to be there or not, as though like audience is going to tune out if it's not there.
God bless you for it's a topic I talk a lot about. And I would say not only are they afraid of quiet and nuance and the dynamics that come from that, but we've gone in this other direction where we're confusing good sound with most sound. And with that, we don't give an award for – awards aren't given for the most sound. And yet, sadly, to the untrained ear, to the general film-going public – it seems that loud movies are the ones that get – it's like the squeaky wheel gets the grease. The loud movie gets the attention. Well, I guess that must be the good sound film because there's a lot of it.
I noticed it so much.
And in fact, when I first met Denis Villeneuve, I flew to Budapest to talk to him about the film. And silence was the first topic of discussion because he was deeply concerned about the areas that I just talked about as well as for the rest of the film, because we know from a biophysical standpoint, you wear the ear out if you just keep playing at these intense levels all the time. You need those dynamics constantly. So, and yet, to play silence, you can't play true silence, because if you go to like all digital zeros, to, you know, if you're talking the math of it, the audience will think there's something wrong with the projector.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you actually have to trick the audience into believing silence exists by interrupting it occasionally. Mm. And that's the key. Just like in fine art, the way to make white whiter is to put a little blue, a speck of blue. That creates the contrast. And that's how you create silence.
That's amazing to me. Yeah. What I'm geeking out so much right now.
Come on, lob another one over the plate.
How did you go from being a musician to what you're doing now? What was the transition?
Well, I always wanted to be in the movie business, but I was I had zero skills in filmmaking, but I played guitar all my life. And I just made this insane decision to – I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts, and I was playing in bands. And I thought, I'm going to go seek my fortune in Los Angeles in filmmaking, but I got this guitar thing just in case. So I drove out with my cousin Bob, you know, did the classic teenage road trip, and drove from Boston to L.A. and landed here and worked at a Taco Bell for a while and tried to make it as a musician and failed miserably, and then got a break at Hanna-Barbera Studios making sounds for cartoons.
Oh, that's actually a really great way to get started, I would assume.
It is the absolute
best. You're telling
the
whole story with...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting about that is that it's actually the best training for sound design. Because what cartoons teach you to do is think metaphorically about sound. You know, when you hit somebody over the head, you don't hear, you know, that's what happens in reality. What you want to do is extrapolate that into what's the consequences of getting hit on the head? Birds chirp, right? And, you know,
I always think of a tiptoeing Fred Flintstone.
Right. Well, that's what the sticks are doing on a xylophone. So you learn to make those untoward associations with sound, and that's what sound design is all about.
Can you go to the movies and not think about this stuff?
He just shook his head.
Did it ruin the movie going experience for you?
Yeah.
Oh. Can you go to silent movies?
I'll add the sounds in. I'll just make them with my mouth or something. It's lacking. It's really lacking.
You turn into Michael Winslow.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
I've worked with Michael Winslow, did voices and sound effects for the first Gremlins movie.
No what? Way.
Do you guys know Michael?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know him.
I didn't know he was in Gremlins.
Hold on, I want to take some credit. I gave Howie Mandel his first break.
What?
He was a friend of Frank Welker's who had just moved to L.A. from Toronto. He grew up in Canada. I can't remember what city. I shouldn't say Toronto. And Frank, who's one of the great, he's the Mel Blanc of my generation. I brought in Frank and I said, I'm looking for another kind of voice for Gizmo. And he said, you know, I get this buddy who's just come out. You want to audition him? And Howie came to my studio, and we were in a medical building next to a gynecologist. And Howie came in and did an audition for him for Gizmo, and he did the voice of Gizmo.
Oh, I love that.
That's amazing. Yes.
Are you seeing more women in the industry than when you started?
No, I'm not. It's actually this has been an ongoing conversation for the last. Obviously the last 2 or 3 months, the last 2 years. I was a governor at the Academy for some time. I was on the board during the whole Oscars So White movement and all the issues that the Academy has had with diversity. And we don't know why are women not interested in pursuing it as a field? They're just thin on the ground. We'd love to have them as members. They're just not there to bring in. I can't explain that.
Well, all the women listeners who are interested in sound editing, just know, apparently.
Call. 818-555-1212.
Ask.
The industry is awaiting you with open arms.
Yeah. And Mark, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
It is an honor.
Thank you.
I'm going to freak out like April did earlier. It is so dope that you're here, dude. Like, I mean, you came in with a Poltergeist story, Gremlins, Space Jam, The Fifth Element. I'm a huge Star Trek guy. My man worked on Star Trek. Bro.
Yeah.
All right, I'll calm down. I'm good. See? I'm focused. Thank you very much for joining us, Mark.
Thank you for having me.
And good luck this weekend.
Thank you. Good luck.
Absolutely. How dope is Mark Mangini? How cool is that dude?
The coolest.
Yeah.
I love him.
Well, y'all, hey, it's time for Staff Picks. Every week we ask the panel to tell us about a movie we think folks should check out. Any movie at all. Rhea, I'm making eye contact with you.
Perfect.
Do you want to start us off?
I love it.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, I'll give you a movie recommendation.
Yes.
Actually, can I give you two?
I wish you would.
Great. So I watch a lot of movies on planes, which is not the optimal viewing for movies, obviously. But I like to keep the movies that I view on planes. I like to, you know, compartmentalize them in my brain of like, okay, this is a very story-based movie. It's not like, you know, a big sort of sci-fi epic or anything. So I watched Battle of the Sexes on a plane.
Okay.
And I loved it. I super loved that movie, and I thought it was a really great adaptation of that event and everything surrounding it. I thought the performances were wonderful. The storytelling of, like, sort of both sides of the equation going into it was absolutely wonderful. There were some, like, a little bit of liberties taken with some of it. But I actually thought, like, Emma Stone is Emma Stone. And Emma Stone is is a cog in a very large wheel. And the thing is, she is very funny and she is a talented actor. Like, in Easy A, she's amazing in the opening scene with that stupid shower and the greeting card. Like, she is talented, and, like, La La Land is La La Land and whatever. But she is very good in it. And so is Steve Carell is really amazing as Bobby Riggs. Mm-hmm. And shout out to Elizabeth Shue showing up in that movie.
Oh, damn.
Love it. There is a moment when she walks into frame, and I swear to God, for a moment, she was going to say, need a ride, mister? Like, or can I get a ride, mister? Because she looks exactly like Jennifer Parker, like, just, she crosses her arms exactly the same! Anyway, so you have to watch it just for that. And I just thought, like, it's wonderfully directed and shot, and I just think it's a really cool whole all-around movie. And then this other movie.
Can I ask you, did you yell, get these sexes off of my plane?
Yeah, it was like, get these sexes off of my motherfucking plane.
Thank you.
The other movie, and This movie is like a little bit, I was not going into it expecting to really like it at all, but it's that movie Only the Brave, which is about the story the Granite Mountain Hotshots, which are like firefighters that fight like wildfires.
Okay, yes.
So
is this a Josh Brolin joint?
It is a Josh Brolin joint.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Oh, okay.
And a Miles Teller joint.
Oh, yes.
Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah, Jennifer Connelly. And that's actually what I want to point out is that Josh Brolin and Jennifer Connelly play a couple, and they are only 2 years apart. Huh. They are actually age compatible. And I was losing my mind the whole time because I was so compelled by the love story between the two, because it's not like a romance. It's just, it's two people that are married and working things out. And it's actually like a really amazing story about responsibility and sobriety and like what it means to face challenges and be a leader and be a husband and be a wife and be all these things. That like, it actually is like, I thought a wonderful film about all those things.
That was a great movie that was completely mismarketed. Like every trailer I saw just made it look so like, you know, Faith Foursquare apple pie. And it's no, it's a complicated movie about complicated people and difficult sacrifices. And the fire stuff is all like terrifying and really well shot. It's great.
I saw the trailer to that, and I was like, get this, like, pro-Americana.
Yeah, they were trying to get that American sniper audience, but it's not that.
They were trying to make it like, hey, it's the Army, but they're firefighters, and it's not actually the Army, but Army! Like, that's definitely what they were trying to make it feel like.
Like, did they try to put guns in the firefighters' hands, you know?
Does the fire have guns? April, what do you got for us?
I'm a little bit non-traditional today. I'm going to say don't go see Red Sparrow. You can read my review in Village Voice on that. And I am going to say do see a movie that I have not seen yet, but it was written about so well by my editor at Village Voice that I love it already. It's called Mohawk. It's kind of like a realistic horror film, and it's about from the review. This is like, of course, me just reading his review. It's about these two Mohawk people who are trying to make their way through like this wilderness with the help of some Americans. They're trying to stay neutral in this war, but this other, you know, new American helps them through. And then there's also like a polyamorous relationship between the three that is apparently very subtle, and the horror of America kind of killing its way to greatness is what it was said. It sounds amazing, and it sounds exactly like the kind of thing that I love, because I also love Bone Tomahawk, if you guys have listened to Switchblade Sisters.
Just about to drop that. I'm still mad about that movie. I mean, honestly, that movie, it took me months to get over having seen that movie.
Oh, I'm not over it.
Like,
so.
I know. Like, you said Mohawk, and I was like, oh, fuck, Bone Tomahawk. Like, I remembered it, and I'm still mad about it. Like, I honestly have PTSD from that movie. It was, days where I was just going, no, just rocking back and forth, like, just trying to get it out of my mind.
Did we watch that?
I don't know. I think it was after.
It was after, okay. But I remember we talked about it, and yeah, you were like,
Canada. I was so mad.
Dude,
and I kept watching. I watched it at home on my computer. I could have turned it off, but I got stuck. I couldn't.
It's so good. The writing is so good that you don't want to turn it off, and it's just like, it's horror. Anyway,
it tricked me.
Anyway, Mohawk, let's go see it together, guys.
Okay,
that's my recommendation.
Alonzo, what do you got for us?
Well, I'm very excited. Filmstruck, when they first announced it last year, it was all like, "Hey, it's TCM and it's the Criterion Collection, and great." And then it was. TCM was sort of managing it and promoting it and running it, but it was all Criterion Collection, and that's great, but I was wanting more TCM, and now there's a whole TCM section on Filmstruck, so they have all these, like, old Betty Davis movies and, you know, Casablanca and, like, the kind of, you know, greatest hits of TCM. So you can go there and get cool old, you know, Hollywood stuff, but also the deep catalog of Criterion stuff. The one I'm going to point out just because I just love that the Criterion Collection, they have remastered, like, all of the old Godzilla movies.
Yes.
And so you can go to Filmstruck and watch Destroy All Monsters, which is the best. It's got all of them, and they all attack the Earth because aliens make them, and then it's grow. It's the best.
And I'm going to throw another curveball at you. I feel like we have to give the people a little bit of a wham-bam-pow moment, and I'm going to include you this and you in this as well, Alonzo. You saw Black Panther?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Out of five, what are those? How many what are those would you give Black Panther?
I give it five what are those out of five what are those. I give it five guns so primitive out of five guns so primitive. Move or be moved. As much as I'd like to see that.
Alonzo, out of five, what does he call him, a colonizer?
Oh, yeah.
Out of five, a colonizer.
That's my drag name, Colonizer.
Yes!
Oh, God.
I give it five broken white boys out of five broken white boys.
Another broken white boy. That's what's
and
up,
here's,
yo.
Here's how you know that I'm a professional. Again, at the Wrinkle in Time premiere, I was about a foot away from Winston Duke. And I did not embarrass myself.
You did not start barking.
You wanted to, though.
I could have embarrassed myself in about 15 different ways, and I just resisted all of them.
Just sat on his lap.
So I just stared at him for a second, and then I kept going.
All right. The staff pick that I have, here's how I'm going to start watching Netflix movies now. If they have a lot of hype behind them, I'm not watching it because I was burned by Cloverfield Paradox. I watched Mute, and I wished I was blind and deaf afterwards from that movie.
Don't forget Bright.
Oh, jeez.
Bright? I had already heard how bad it was, and I was able to enjoy it like, yeah, this is dumb, ridiculous. But the other two movies, I was expecting a movie out of them. But I watched this movie last night. It's about four friends who go to the Swedish wilderness for a hike. They go there for a very specific reason that's kind of sad. And then shit gets real fucked up. This movie's called The Ritual, and I recommend it very much so.
Sorry, I'm just like, Have
you seen it,
April? This is my church.
I was going to ask you afterwards.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Say it. Say it.
Welcome to the April Wolf wheelhouse.
Well, I highly recommend y'all check out The Ritual on Netflix. It's currently streaming on Netflix. All right, hey, y'all. Next week, we'll be talking about Game Night. Oh, and guess who will be back? The one and only Ingu Kang will be in the house.
Woo!
That's what's up.
Ingu.
Hey, if you like what you're hearing, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. 5-star reviews get a shout-out on the show. This week, we got Bobo Puppyhead. Been missing my regular dose of Ricky Carmona's infectious positivity ever since Wham Bam Pow ended, but strangely enough, I discovered Who Shot Ya through my new favorite podcast, Switchblade Sisters. Yup. April Wolf has already seen so many films that I'm destined to love. Her recommendations are pure gold for me. Ed Alonzo's the deep, deep knowledge of both categories of cinema, Christmas-related and non-Christmas-related.
Those are the two categories.
And I just found my new favorite podcast, Thanks One and All. But we thank you, Bubble Puppyhead. Hey, check out our Facebook group if you haven't subscribed already. Handle that. Just go to Facebook.com. Look up Who Shot Your Podcast and you will get to us. We want to give a shout out and a big thank you to Mark Mangini. We wish you all of the luck this Sunday at the Academy Awards. Thank you all for joining us and listening to this dope-ass episode. April, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Ricky.
Alonzo, my man.
Gracias.
Si. Rhea. Huh?
The reunion.
Come the reunion, yo!
Can I also let the people know
Please, I am
going on tour at the end of March? I'm going to be all over sort of the Midwest and the Eastern Seaboard, a little bit, Pennsylvania, all kinds of stuff. So you can check out those tour dates on RhiaButcher.com.
Yeah.
So please come out and see me and let's talk movies.
That's right. RhiaButcher.com. Follow her on Twitter, on Instagram. She's dope on all that.
I'm dope. That is one thing about me. I am dope.
Holler at that Take My Wife on iTunes on Monday. If you have any comments or suggestions about this week's show, you can tweet us at WhoShotYaPod or send us an email at WhoShotYaMaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. I've been your host, Ricky Carmona. This has been Who Shot Ya. This is a production of MaximumFun.org. And that's what's up.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.